法师，诸位菩萨，新年吉祥。
All the Dharma masters and everyone in attendance in the audience have a happy new year.
今天很高兴在这里跟大家见面。
I'm thrilled to be here today to share this occasion with you.
今天的主题是好愿在人间。
The theme for today's talk is a good wish for the world.
每一年的新年来临的时候呢，我们都会到庙里头去，或者是到寺院里头去，然后呢抢头香啊。
Oftentimes at New Year's, people would go to the temple or monasteries and try to be the first one to put the incense stick into the incense pot.
可是我们这里没得抢。
But we don't have this practice here, so there's no way that you can fight for it.
那为什么要抢头香呢？其实呢，叫个讨一个吉祥。这个因为是第一个的，所以呢是一定是非常吉祥的，非常好运，生意呢也好，这个家庭也健平安，然后呢什么事情都很顺利啊，对不对？
And why is that the people want to fight for this honor to be the first one to put the incense stick into the pot? That's because people tend to think that being the first one is very auspicious. Not only you will have success at work, be healthy, and also everyone in the family will be healthy and peaceful.
好，这呢，这呢，主要是讲一个什么，什么愿意得到什么了，这个是变成一个好愿这样子哈。
So people tend to be praying for something and wishing for, hoping that their prayer will come true.
啊，我记得有一次我们在那个许愿的树上面啊，挂了很多那些许愿，比如说我们这个灯啊，有没有写那个许愿的不知道啊。那个其中有一个愿很有意思啊，我觉得有一点点意外了，就是说希望不要有灰指甲。
So at other places, we have this practice of making a tree and people could put their wishes, write it on the piece of paper and put it on the tree. And so there are all sorts of wishes. But one year I saw this wish that was kind of a surprise to me, and that's rather rare. The wish was praying that the fungus toe would disappear.
所以呢，要什么愿，很多种愿啊，什么愿都有啊。这个我们不能说这个不行，这是人有那个心愿是怎么样的。
So there are all sorts of hopes and wishes, and it's limitless.
那我们就跟着这个主题啊，好愿在人间来看看，有关于这个愿的哦，是应该是怎么发法。或者是有什么让我们可以学习的，跟谁学习啊？跟佛、菩萨、祖师来学习，怎么样的一个许这个愿呢？
So based on this year's theme, the theme of this talk, a good wish for the world, let's explore this topic a little bit. To see how we should, what kind of wish and what kind of vows we should be making.And who we should be learning from. We will be learning from the Buddha, from the Bodhisattvas, and from the great masters and patriarchs. What kind of wishes do they make?
第一个呢是，我们大家这个常常念经嘛，什么妙法莲华经啊，金刚经啊，阿弥陀经啊，首楞严经啊，维摩经啊，这些经对大家来讲有没有听过？有吗？
So the first master we're going to talk about, it's related to, oftentimes when we're reading sutras, we see this person in the Lotus Sutra, the Diamond Sutra, the Amitabha Sutra, the Surigama Sutra, the Vilamakirti Sutra. In all these sutras, you'll see this name quite often.
那是看中文的话呢，翻译者是谁？ 他知道吗？ 啊，鸠摩罗什，好厉害哦！
So if you're reading the Chinese sutra, the name, do you know the name of this great translator who translated all these sutras? In English, it's Kumar Rajiva.
Okay. 那他就翻译了很多很多这个非常，我们可以说是翻成中文啊，而且呢是中国人看起来很顺畅的，就不像是一个翻译的经本这样子。
So Kumar Rajiva translated many, many of the great sutras, and he has done it in such a way, in such high quality, that even native Chinese speakers will read these sutras and not know that it's actually a translator work.
不只是刚刚提的那几个经本，还有大品般若经、小品般若经、坐禅三昧经、大智度论、中论、百论十二门论。 哦，好多啊！
So not only those very common, well-known ones, there are also other sutras such as the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra, the Astasaha Shrika Prajna Sutra, the Sutra on the Concentration of Sitting Meditation, Great Treatise of the Perfection of Wisdom, the Madhyamaka Sarika, and Sata Sastra, and there are many, many of them.
好。 这个呢，大家可能就不是那么熟悉哈。可是他其实的不只是这些，他翻译了很多。然后呢，这些经典论点对这个中国的佛教呢是影响非常大。然后呢，流传了很久。然后呢，他的贡献是非常的伟大。因为什么？因为一直到现在我们还在用。
So the ones I just named, those are less well-known by people. But not only those popular as well as the ones I named, there are actually many more that he had translated. And so the influence, impact of the sutra had on the development of Chinese Buddhism is profound. And so the contribution Kumar Rajiva had made is also profound and great. To the extent that even this day, we are still reading a lot of his great work.
所以呢，我们看到他这些经典，他的翻译呢，第一个呢是他的翻译的功夫呢是非常厉害的，啊，那语文呢非常有天分，同时呢，不只是这个，他自己本身那个经历，啊，那。 如果是我们看他的故事的时候呢，是我们会被他感动的。So
the reason why he's able to do all these, translated all these great work, not only is he extremely skillful and he's an expert in translation, very, very talented in learning of languages. At the same time, his own personal experience is also diverse and profound to the point that these days, when we read his biographies, we can often be touched by the events that he went through in his life.
小时候他是非常的聪明，他读的、念的书呢很快啊、哦、就懂了，然后呢很小就跟着母亲就出家，然后呢学着这个佛教的经典，然后稍微长大的时候呢。 他根本是在他自己的国家啊，叫做秋瓷这个国家，就英文叫做 Kuchina 这个国家，他是非常的有名。他有名到什么样的程度呢？就是说，他每次他在讲经的时候啊，连那个国家的皇帝呢，都要趴在地上，然后呢，他是踩过他们的背部经过，然后呢才上这个台。 来演讲的，那可想而知，他那个名声是非常的响亮的。
So Kumar Rajiva, he, since he was very young, he was very skillful and very smart in learning anything. And he left home at a very young age, following his mother, and started studying the great sutras and sastras in Buddhism. And he became very, very well known in his country. He's initially from the country Kuchina. And he's so esteemed by everyone in the country, to the point where whenever he ascend the platform, ascend the seat to give a teaching, the kings and the royal families will all kneel and prostrate in front of him, and he will be, the way he ascend the stage will be to step on all their backs step by step to ascend the stage to give the talk. That's the kind of esteem that was given to him.
大家有没有看过那个最近一部电影，就是好像是大唐玄奘是不是，那个黄晓明主演的那个玄奘和尚的，有没有看过大唐西游记？大唐西游记吗？啊，反正是那个电影啊，有没有看过？有看过的时候呢，就看到那个景象，是那个玄奘和尚呢，他在演讲的时候呢，真的是那个皇帝就是趴在地上，然后他们那些官员都趴在地上，然后他们真的是踩上去而上来的才演讲的。
There is a recent film in Chinese. I don't know if any of you have seen it. It's called, a rough translation is The Journey to the West of the Tang Dynasty. I think the main leading actor is Huang Xiaoming. And so it's the story of Master Quan Zhang. And in that film, you get to see the scene that I just described reenacted, where when Master Quan Zhang is giving a talk, a teaching, all the royal families as well as the officials would kneel down, you know, flat on the ground and allow him to step on their back to ascend the stage.
那这个鸠摩罗什他是发什么愿呢？他那个时候还没有去中国，可是呢他的名声啊已经传到那么远了，他就连中国的这个皇帝啊，那个当时叫做那个应该是先秦啊，叫做苻坚，都知道他，然后想请他来中国。
So, what kind of vows or wish did Kumar Rajiva make at that time before he even went to China? The time of Kumar Rajiva was the early Qing Dynasty. 先秦, and the emperor at that time was Fu Jian. Even him had heard the name of Kumar Rajiva and wanted to invite him over to China.
那他的愿呢，就是要把佛法呢传到中国去。他看到那个时候中国有这个趋向，就是佛法会在那边兴盛，所以他的发愿是到那边，到中国去。可是呢他就经过很多磨难了。第一个呢是这个苻坚，为了要请到他，第一个呢他首先是跟鸠兹的国王说，我可不可以请他这个到中国来，被拒绝了。结果呢他就很生气，就派了就他的将军就是吕光齁，派了70,000军队齁到那边去打鸠兹，为了什么？为了要得到这个法师。
So, Kumar Rajiva, the vow or the wish he made is to share Buddha Dharma and to spread Buddha Dharma in China, because he was able to foresee that Buddhism will actually flourish in China. So he had this vow, but at that time he was still at Kuchina. And there were actually a lot of obstacles that came about before he was able to actually come to China. And one of the first obstacles was that when the emperor of China, Fu Jian, heard about Kumar Rajiva, he wanted to invite him over to China. So he made a request, the emperor made a request to the king of Kuchina to invite Kumar Rajiva over to China. The king of Kuchina refused flat. And so Fu Jian, the emperor of China, was enraged. And so he had his general, Lü Guang, leading 70,000 soldiers to conquer Kuchina in order to invite Kumar Rajiva over to China.
可是呢, 打赢了是这个仗之后呢, 结果这个福建呢, 就在自己在中国呢是被 被杀死了，所以呢，这个王朝就没有了。然后这个将军呢，吕光呢，他不知道这个屈摩池那么重要，他刚才这个年轻的和尚一点都不出色，他就很小看他，他就抓着他这样子，可是他没有杀他，就回头到中国去，然后呢。 到一个地方呢，他们那个晚上要停留在那边休息，因为军队打仗打完之后呢要休息了嘛。那结果呢，那个屈摩罗什就跟吕光说，这个地方很不好，因为这个地形啊很不好，那个会有这个山洪爆发，很危险的，不要留在这里，今天不要在这里扎营，要离开。可是呢，吕光就不听他，因为他说。 这个小和尚，这个年轻和尚什么都不懂，你算什么？结果他们扎营那个晚上呢，就洪水爆发，然后呢，这个淹没了上千个士兵。然后从那次以后呢，吕光才重视，哎，就觉得哎，这个和尚不简单哦。So
even though the battle was won, China won, yet Fu Jian, before he was able to actually see Kumar Rajiva, he was killed in his own, in China, and the dynasty had ended. But the general, Lü Guang, didn't know that the king had been killed. And instead, he was still at Kuchina, and he got Kumar Rajiva, and he saw this very young monk and not very impressed, this young little, you know, this young dude. So he actually captured him and dragged him along, trying to go get back to China to present him to the king. And one night, they actually, the whole troop camped out at one site. And Kumar Rajiva told the general Lü Guang, this is not a good place to rest. There's going to be a flood tonight. But Lü Guang, thinking that this young monk probably doesn't know what he's talking about, disbelieved him. The same night, indeed, there was a flood, and over 1,000 soldiers was killed. So from that point on, the general Lü Guang started to believe in Kumar Rajiva.
可是呢，因为他这个吕光这个将军呢，他不信佛的，他只是重视，哎，他有这个才能。 哎，就变成他的军师了，但是他不是学佛的，所以呢，他也没怎么重视他。然后呢，因为这个样子，然后呢，因为这个福建这个是过世了嘛，所以呢，这个吕光呢就变成自己是个皇帝，然后呢就在注册在一个就是停留在一个地方，那个地方呢16年他没有重用到。
So even though Lü Guang started to develop faith in Kumar Rajiva, but he wasn't Lü Guang the general wasn't a Buddhist. He respected Kumar Rajiva's intellect. So he used him as a strategist, and instead of developing a faith and practice in Buddhism. Once Lü Guang later on found out that Fu Jian, the earlier emperor had died, he actually proclaimed himself as a king and dwelt at a place for over 16 years. And in this 16 years of time, Kumar Rajiva stayed with him, but he was not esteemed or respected as a Buddhist master.
他只是说有什么是这个国家有什么事情有什么问题的时候，那就请教他，哎，那个一个怎么办，那个一个怎么办而已。他没有这个对佛法他是没有兴趣的。
So Lü Guang only sought advice from Kumar Rajiva regarding daily affairs, not Buddha Dharma.
可是呢鸠摩罗什在这个16年的时间呢，他就好好利用这个16年，他学什么？学中文，他去了解中国文化，中国的习俗，跟当地人慢慢慢慢，他的语言能力很快就建立起来了。那他就可以跟这个中国人是当时的中国人一样的沟通啊，这个交流啊等等。
During the 16 years, instead of wasting the time, Kumar Jiva actually used it to learn Chinese. And because of his intellect, he was able to pick up the language really quickly and able to converse freely with the people at that time. So that's how he used the 16 years.
所以这16年以后是还是继续有那个战争啊这些等等。后来呢连这个因为16年的时间很长。所以呢吕光也死了，然后他的儿子是继任，然后呢后来也打仗了什么的，然后呢就换了朝代，那终于鸠摩罗什呢能够来到中国的长安，那个时候呢是好像是姚琴这个皇帝就很重用他，然后呢就开始做这个翻译的工作。
16 years is a very long time, and during this time, there were still wars happening all the time, and eventually Li Guang died, and his son ascended the throne, and eventually there were more battles, and Kumar Jiva, at the end of the 16 years, finally got to China, and arrived at Chang'an, and was able to meet the emperor at that time, which is Yao Qin, and only until then,Yao Qin started to really appreciate the kind of teaching that Kumar Jiva is bringing and respect him as a great Buddhist master.
可是这个过程呢，第一个呢是鸠摩罗什遇到什么困难呢？就是那个时候的吕光啊，就逼着他要结婚。而为什么要逼着他结婚呢？说你这个好那么好的优秀的种子那个是那么优秀的 DNA 还要留下来，所以一定要结婚生孩子，要不然太浪费了。
One of the obstacles that confronted Kumar Jiva during this time was that the general Li Guang forced him to get married. And the reason behind that is that Kumar Jiva, you have such great genes, you have to pass on your genes so that we get to benefit from your DNA.That wasn't a word used, but to pass on his genes and lineage. So he was forced to get married.
那大家知道哈，这个真正的正统的出家人呢是不可以结婚的，不可以有这个家庭的生活，有生小孩的这个事。所以其实当时是非常的为难的。可是因为为了要到中国去哈。他有些时候呢他要忍辱他就只好遵从这样子。
An ordained monk is not supposed to have any family life or to procreate. But because of his vows and because he wants to be able to eventually get to China, so he actually followed Li Guang's order.
然后呢回到了长安，这个有翻译以后呢，虽然是姚琴是对他这个是很尊重了，可是那个观念，中国人那个时候观念还是没办法变了，他就给他十个宫女就跟着他这样子做他的 whatever.
and even once after he reached China and was respected by Yao Qin and started translating all these great sutras,It's very interesting that at that time, people just have this very fixated concept and ideas. So despite the fact that he's an ordained monk, the emperor Yao Qin still gifted him with 10 maids or courtesan to let him do whatever with them.
那因为这个样子，所以呢，当时他已经非常有名了。然后呢那些这个当时那些中国的出家人就跟着他这样子去做，你可以娶老婆，我也可以娶老婆。
because he was already very famous at that time. So a lot of the Buddhist monks in China decided to copy him, saying that, hey, Kumarajiva is able to get married, so we're going to get married too.
有一天呢，他就是拿一个碗。 那个碗上面呢，都是很锋利那些针啊，然后他对着他那些，这是这应该是他的弟子啊，说我呢，可以啊，吃这个一整碗的针啊，我吃下去，你如果你们其中有人能够做这样子的话呢，你就可以跟着我一样，你可以娶老婆这样子，然后他当场就把它吞下来了，吞下去没事这样子，然后那些他的徒弟啊，就是。
So Kumarajiva brought out a bowl of sharp needles, and he said to these supposed disciples, and said to them that, I'm able to swallow these needles and not be harmed by them. If you're able to do what I do, also swallow these needles, then you can follow me as well and have wives. And so Kumarajiva took a handful of needles and swallowed it, and he was fine. And the rest of the people in the audience, his disciples, were shocked, and they were scared, and no one dared to copy him. And so because of that, they eventually decide to be good and stay as a monk that follow precepts.
他在这个这么多年呢、啊，他的翻译了很多经典。他临死的时候呢，他就讲了一句话说：“我所讲的，我所翻译的，是符合佛陀的教导。所以呢，我死以后呢，将我荼皮，就不皮就是火化的意思哈。那我的舌根哈、啊、就会留下来，表示说。” 我讲的话是真的，如果是没有的话呢，表示我这些翻译的经典是不正确的，然后当他过世的时候，他真的是这个火化以后呢，就是只是留下了那个舌根，现在有纪念塔在那边，在中国还有。So
Kumarajiva translated many sutras in his lifetime, and upon his deathbed, he said, I stand behind my translated work, and they are true words from the Buddha. If this is true, once I pass away and you cremate my body, my tongue will remain. It will not be burned by the fire. It will remain. And this will indicate that everything that I have translated is indeed accurate and true to the source. And so when they actually cremated Kumarajiva's body, yes, the tongue was left, and it was unscathed. And so they kept the tongue and eventually built a memorial hall, and it still exists in China to this day.
那这个是第一个故事跟大家分享，另外一个呢是跟大家分享的是玄奘大师，哎。 这次选的两个都是翻译的，翻译的大师。那个时候呢，他是在这个鸠摩罗什之后那个年代，大概是600年到664年的这个时间哦。那当时呢，其实虽然鸠摩罗什已经翻译很多经典，可是呢，在中国。 有时候学这些佛法的时候呢，有很多种讲法，这个专精讲某不精或什么样啊，那讲法跟另外一个人讲的是有点出入的，是这样的。所以呢，玄奘呢就发愿啊，也是一个愿啊，就要到这个源头去找这个源头，但是这个经典究竟怎么样，那就到印度去。可是当时呢是不得到允许的，因为还是在一种。 边界上面还是一种动乱的状态，所以呢是不可以出去的。可是玄奘呢是发了这个愿，所以呢他出去去印度去取经。
So another great master I'm going to share with you today is Master Xuan Zhuang, who also happened to be a great translator. And his time was after Kumarajiva, around 600 to 664 AC. So at that time, he was born into the Tang Dynasty. Even though Kumarajiva had already brought a lot of sutras and texts and translated them and brought them to China, but during Master Xuan Zhuang's time, whenever a master teaches a sutra, they tend to be many different variations. One person will teach one way, the other person will teach another way. So it's very diverse and noisy. Xuan Zhuang made the vow that he wants to go directly to the source, which is India, to find out and to clarify what this is all about.
那不允许他出去，可是呢，后来他这就是应该算是偷渡出去嘛。那离开了以后呢，其实他也是被这个，应该是被皇帝哈。或者是政府啊，这个是追回来的，也是发这个通告，这个人不要让他出境啊，可是他还是继续做，然后呢，他遇到一些阻碍啊，然后有一些地方呢，一些就是边远的地方的官员呢，有些是佛教徒呢，也帮他的忙，让他偷偷的过去了。那这个关卡是第一个啊，就是那个时候在边界上面呢，有五个烽火台啊。他第一个烽火台，他的官员，那个官员就告诉他哦，你要走这条路，然后就避开这四个烽火台，然后到最后一个第五个呢，你要怎么办啊？是那个人可能他会阻挡你，可是呢，我写封信给你，然后呢，他可能会帮你的忙这样子。
So even with this great vow.His journey was met with a lot of difficulties. At that time, the country was still also at war. So it was only the very beginning stage of a peaceful time. And so at that time, traveling was very difficult. And it's hard to obtain permission to actually leave the country. So he actually did not obtain approval from the emperor, and he had to snuck out of the country.It was not allowed. And actually, later on, there were notices wanted to try to capture and bring him back to the country. And so he met a lot of... So this is one of the biggest hurdles that he had to go through. The first one is to actually leave the country and get to India. And there were a lot of stories, even in this first leg, one of which is that at the border, there were five stations. And the person who was in charge of the first station actually helped Master Xuan Zhuang, and he said that he taught him the exact way of getting around the rest of the four stations, and he even told Master Xuan Zhuang that the fifth guy may give you a lot of difficulties or might even want to capture you. Let me write you a letter and to help you with a smooth passage. So he went through a lot of obstacles trying to.In along the way of traveling to India.
大家知道那个年代是第一个呢是没有所谓的护照嘛哈，然后也没有什么签证嘛哈，其实还蛮难的，而且呢也没有办法坐飞机，这样一飞下去几个钟头就到了哈，这不行，都要自己走路过去的，那就是很远，那个路程是很远的。
As you know, at that time, there's no such thing as passport or visas, and there's no airplane. It's not like you can hop on an airplane, get there within a couple hours. Everything is, you have to walk it, rely on your two legs. So that the traveling itself is already fraught with difficulties.
然后呢，要穿过这个沙漠，在穿过沙漠之前呢，他差一点就被那个士兵啊，就是用箭来杀死他的。然后在这个沙漠的时候呢，有一次呢，他那个装水那个水囊啊，就全部都倒下来，倒掉了，没有水了。可是那个时候他怎么办呢？这个要经过这个沙漠哈，是非常的困难的，只有靠水。那怎么办呢？他不管哦， 可是那他会想想，哎，我是不是回到那个第五个那个烽火台那边去取水呢？他本来是想这样子，结果后来他又在想是说，我出去的时候我就曾经发愿，我是不回头的，如果是没有办法取经的话呢，我情愿是死的。所以就是因为这个愿，他就继续走，走了五天没有水，没有东西喝，五天哦，在沙漠里头。
So when he was trying to cut across the desert, once he was almost shot by a soldier, and later on, a worse situation confronted him, that where his water skin, the water bottle, the host of water, was actually knocked over, so he lost all the water that he had. So at that point, cutting across the desert without water is unthinkable. So he thought to himself, should I return to the fifth station and get some water before I start, go back out again? So he thought to himself, and then he thought a little bit more and recalled the vow he made. The vow he made was, I will never turn around until I reach my destination. I will never turn around. So because of this vow, he did not turn back. He continued to walk in the desert for 5 days, completely without water. And after 5 days, he finally reached the Gaochang country, nation.
那他到了高昌以后呢，他又遇到了一个困难。就是有个皇帝啊，他非常的尊敬佛法，他就看到玄奘是个很好的人才，就想把他留下来，说你不要去印度了，你就在这里就好了，我就供养你，你好好的这个是这个演讲，这个弘扬这个佛法就好了。他是非常虔诚的一个佛教徒，然后呢每一天供养他很多食物。可是玄奘呢，他的愿呢，只是要到这个西天的天竺印度去取经嘛，他说不行，我这个愿是不能够这样子做的。所以呢，他就开始怎么样啊？不吃东西了，绝食。绝食到了第三天，这个好像没力气了，就是快要垮下来了。然后那个皇帝也就吓了，哎呀，不行啊，我这样子做这个是不对的哦。我怎么可以这样子？后来就不留难他了，就是哎呀，那就好好照，就是供养他，然后呢，给他很多食物啦，给他很多那个资助的这个车啊马，不是车人的马啦，这些东西哈，让他继续的就往前走。
Once he reached the country Gaochang, the emperor at that time at Gaochang is actually a very devout Buddhist.He had a lot of great respect for Master Xuan Zhuang, thinking that he's such a treasure. That so he's actually inviting Xuan Zhuang to stay. And he told Xuan Zhuang that there's really no need for you to travel on. You should just stay here and expound your teaching, and we'll pay you with great respect. But because of his initial vow, Xuan Zhuang, his vow is to get to India, to the source of all these sutras.So he refused the offerings made by this emperor, and he actually went on a hunger strike, basically saying that if you don't let me go, continue my journey, I will not eat. So after 3 days, when Xuan Zhuang felt, he was all, you know, tired and exhausted from the hunger strike, finally the emperor compromised and is willing to...help him along his journey. So he made a lot of offerings to Xuan Zhuang and gave him a lot of food supplies as well as horses to help him continue his journey to India.
那当然他不只是遇到这个，有时候呢是在这个过程之中呢，他也遇到一些这个，有个比较明显的记载呢，就是他遇到那个强盗。然后呢那些强盗呢是他们是信一种邪教啊，他要每一年要找一个非常庄严的人呢来祭神。那结果那个时候呢是遇到就是玄奘就被遇到了啊，就抓着玄奘说这个只是要杀他让他祭神。
There were other obstacles along his journey. One of the more well-known one that's in the record is that he encountered a group of bandits. And this group of band, they actually practice this exotic religion that every year they have to try to capture someone who looks very auspicious and make a human sacrifice to their god. And so, unfortunately, Master Shenzhuang ran into this group of bandits and was captured.
然后同行的人呢，有的人是愿意哈，是我来顶替这个玄奘啊。可是呢，这个这些强盗不愿意，因为他说他要找一个非常庄严的人。然后玄奘是，就是他那个基因很好，他的爸爸是非常高大、非常庄严，所以他也是一样。 所以呢，他们就一定选定是玄奘，然后呢，弄一个台上去，是准备把它烧了哈。So
people in Shenzhuang's Master Shenzhuang's group, there were actually people willing to sacrifice themselves to take his place and be the one who gets sacrificed. But the group of bandits refused because they wanted the one who looks the best, you know, looks most auspicious. And because Shenzhuang was born in a very good family, he also has very good genes. So he's the one that's, that looks the best, most auspicious among the group. So the bandit insist on taking Shenzhuang and sacrificing Shenzhuang. So they actually build the stage and set up a pyre and ready to burn him.
然后突然之间呢，是这个大风大雨，打雷打雷，然后呢，吓死那些强盗了。哇，这个是怎么会这个样子？这个出家人一定是什么样的来历哦？会怎么样这样的？我们一定是做了错了什么事情？他就把他赶快跟他说这个，这很抱歉啊，这个是我忏悔啊，这样，这样的把他放下来。So
sitting on top of the pyre, Master Shenzhuang recited Buddha's name, and suddenly thunders and lightning, the rains and whatever all came down, and the group of bandits was terrified, and they thought to themselves, we must have done something wrong to anger the spirits, that we need to repent to Master Shenzhuang. So they quickly let him go, put him, you know, set him right, and repent to him, apologize for their wrongdoings.
诶，就没事了，就没有风雨了。
And suddenly all the rain clouds and the thunders disappeared.
好，那当然这个，回后来呢，是到了印度，然后呢，学习很多年的17年的时间呢，是在印度学习各种各样的经典，有反正有大圣小圣的都学，然后呢，还出名到呢，就是有一次的辩论的时候呢，他是辩。 就是他辩才无碍啊，就是在当时他赢了，然后呢，他的名声是整个印度都知道。
And after all these obstacles, finally, he arrived. Master Shenzhuang arrived in India, and he stayed there and studied for 17 years. And in this 17 years, he studied all sorts of sutras from different schools of thoughts. And there was, in the record, there's also a very famous event where there was a great debate of him having debate with other masters as well as great teachers from that's outside of Buddhism. And they had this great debate. And because his ability and intellect, as well as his skillfulness and expertise, Master Shenzhuang actually won all this debate, and he became extremely famous, and his name is well known around the nation.
那时候他学习最时间应该最久的是在拿兰陀那个大学，那个时候是印度很出名的一个大学，学了很久。然后呢，后来回到这个中国的时候呢。 得到皇帝的非常的重用，也帮助他，也做了很大一个翻译场，然后呢，就开始这个翻译的工作，所以呢，其实翻译出来的经典，也是非常的多。And
within those 17 years, he probably stayed the longest time at this school, this Buddhist school, Nalanda Monastery. And And once after he has done it with his study, he returned to China, and he was highly esteemed by the emperor at that time. And also the emperor helped him build a translation school, and they translated a lot of the sutras and scriptures from within Buddhism.
他不只是做翻译的工作，同时呢，他也写了一本很有名的一本书，叫做《大唐西域记》。他《大唐西域记》呢，不是讲佛经，而是说讲的是他在印度所经历的很多地方的一个记载，记载当时的风土人情习惯然后呢，有多少这个佛教的寺院呢，有多少这个出家人呢，所有这些风俗呢，他会记下来。那一本书呢，一直留到现在，因为你知道这个印度啊，他们没什么记载的历史的记载的。那现在呢，其他的翻成很多国家的语言，同时呢，有些人这个，比如说这个有时候是在印度发现了一什么样的地方啊，挖掘出来他们不知道的，他就根据这本《大唐西域记》的那本书呢，去找出来这资料，这个位置在哪里等等等等，所以变成那本书是一直到现在非常有价值的一本书。
In addition to translating all these sutras and scriptures, Master Xuan Zhuang also wrote a very famous book, which is The Journey to the West. And in this this is an autobiography and also a detailed record of his journey. He wrote down the countries that he passed, as well as all the cultures and habits, the people of these different places. This book became such a valuable source of knowledge of the time that of Master Xuan Zhuang, because at that time in India, written records were not as popular. So this record that was written by Master Xuan Zhuang later on has actually been translated into many languages. And to this day, sometimes archaeologists, they will find some sort of record or relics from that time period. They would reference Master Xuan Zhuang's book to try to trace back to that period of time. So the book has become invaluable to human history.
那他回到中国以后呢，他还是有些遇到一些这困难呢，就是皇帝第一个呢叫他还俗，然后呢帮皇帝这个辅佐这个政权这样子。然后他也去拒绝了，他说我是出家人，我对这个方面我不熟悉了，你这个有点像什么，你把一只船很有用的船，然后你叫它上岸放在那边是没有用的，他也拒绝了。
So even after he returned to China, he still encountered some obstacles, one of which is the emperor actually asked him to renounce his monastic life and return to laity life and to become one of the high officials to help him with governing the country. And Master Xuan Zhuang refused, saying that this doesn't make sense. I am a monk. And if you want me to become an official in your court, it would be as if you are dragging a boat. A boat is floating very well in the river. You're dragging the boat on ashore and wanting the boat to run on land. So this kind of obstacle still confronted him from time to time.
好，那我们玄奘大师哈就讲到这里。那当然我们所知道的什么《西游记》里头的这个什么唐三藏啊，这个人物跟这个真实人物是真的是相差这个多少啊？这个一万八千里就这么远，很不一样的一个人。
So there's a famous fictional novel, it's also called Journey to the West, that is one of the great classics in Chinese literature. That Master Xuan Zhuang that is portrayed in that novel is actually drastically different than the historical Master Xuan Zhuang. The characters are vastly different.
那当然西游记很有趣，就是最有趣大概是孙悟空嘛，哦，跟那个猪八戒啊，今年是猪年了，猪八戒在哪里？
So in that fictional work, the famous character, the Monkey King, and also his younger Dharma brother, the pig general, the boar general, and this year is the journey, the year of the pig, and where is he?
那其实呢，是这个不小说是有一点点那个这个有关系的，比如说孙悟空为什么叫做悟空呢？其实是他是开悟了啦，他是悟空。然后猪八戒呢，他的手的是八戒，沙僧就是一个出家人，哦，沙和尚嘛，哦，是有一点点了。可是把那个唐三藏的这个人物变成一个非常懦弱的一个人，而什么都不懂，只会念咒语。哦，这个人是叫孙悟空，这个头痛让他听到话而已。
Actually, in the fictional work, the names of these three famous disciples, the Monkey King, the Pig General, and as well as the Monk, their names, you could also trace it back to Buddhist origins. Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, means that he's an enlightened person. Zhu Bajie, the Pig General, he's following the eight precepts, etc. Except that in this fictional work, Master Xuan Zhuang has been portrayed as someone who's extremely meek and ignorant, and he doesn't have the courage to make any decisions. All he dares to do is to recite the Buddha's name and recite mantras, and whenever he recites the mantra, then the Monkey King's headband will start tightening up and giving him a bad headache. So that's the fictional Master Xuan Zhuang.
好，我们现在讲到哇，要讲快一点，要不然时间到了，到十二点嘛，到鉴真和尚，鉴真和尚大家可能不是很熟悉，有听过吗？东渡到日本，然后呢他是什么样的出名呢？那个时候是在日本呢，是戒律呢是非常的松散的，然后呢鉴真和尚呢当时是688年到763年，因为他是唐朝的时候，他是戒律非常的出名，他那个传授的戒律啊，先后有40000人就是跟他受戒的，然后呢就得到日本的邀请去日本去把这个戒律弘扬到那边去，他答应了，结果他一去经过6次的磨难，而且呢到了第5次的时候呢，他这个眼睛都瞎了，可是呢他一定要去，他发愿要去这个日本来传这个戒法，所以呢他不管年纪，第一个是年纪大了，第二个呢眼睛也瞎了，可是呢他说这个他发这个愿第五次的时候呢他发这个愿了，不到日本呢我的愿是不能够完成的，所以他一定要去。
The third great master is Master Jian Zhen, which may not be as familiar to many of you. Master Jian Zhen was also from the time of Tang Dynasty and around years 700-ish AC. And he was actually very well known for upholding the precepts. And because of this, he was invited to Japan to give teachings to pass on, to help to strengthen. At that time in Japan, the monks in Japan, they were very laxed with the precepts. So Master Jian Zhen was in, they tried to invite Master Jian Zhen from China to Japan to help them tighten up the precepts. And he actually encountered a lot of obstacles as well on his journey to Japan. He tried to get there at 6 different times, failing each time until the 6th one. And within all these journeys, these trips, attempts of getting to Japan, There were many, many difficulties, and one of which is that he has aged significantly, so difficulty confronted by age. Also, on his fifth trip, he actually became blind. But he still held very firm to his original vow, which is that I vow to get to Japan. And finally, on his sixth attempt, he was able to get to Japan.
那他也遇到了一些困难，但一些困难的原因就是因为他太出名了，很多中国他的弟子想他，你不要去，你留下来嘛，不要去日本了，可是他已经答应了，他一定要去，他是，所以我们看到，这个一个呢是受阻碍，另外一个呢是那个愿力是很强的，啊，已经答应的事情，发这个愿就是要去做。啊，到了第六次，然后呢是正式的，那个时候是正式的日本的那个大使，就是使节哈，来邀请，可是呢还是被皇帝拒绝，然后呢后来是他们还是偷偷的去了，那是第六次就成功。
Some of these obstacles was the origin of it was because Master Jianzhen was too famous, too well known, too good of a teacher that a lot of his disciples in China didn't want him to go, didn't want to let him go. Yet Master Jianzhen, he made the vow, he made the promise to go to Japan. So despite all the difficulties that was put in his path, he still went ahead to try to make these journeys.It's not until the sixth time where the envoys from Japan, the Kantoshis, they actually came to invite him over. And even on this sixth trip, he still wasn't able to leave the country officially. So similar to Master Xuanzang, he snuffed out.
那到了日本，当然去的时候呢，是带了很多中国的一些文物啊。有艺术的，有医学的，到日本去，然后呢，盖了一个寺院，叫做唐招提寺。
So once he get to China, when he left the country, he actually brought a lot of cultural artifacts, books, artwork, as well as books on medicines. So he took all those over to Japan, and he also helped to create a blueprint of the Toshodashi-ji Temple in Japan, Nara.
好，那这个呢是这个鉴真和尚哦。那我们看一看，看看我们因为时间的关系，我就讲一下我们的师父。这其实不用讲太多，大家知道师父为什么这个要那么努力呢？哦，他就想了一句话：佛法什么这么好啊？误会的人，知道的人那么少，然后呢，误解的人就很多。他就发这个愿啊，把这个佛法让更多人知道。那在发愿这个过程中呢，他自己要怎么样？要加强自己要学习。然后呢，我们还可以发现到啊，他早期讲的国语跟后期他讲的国语呢是不太一样的。早期讲的国语有时候我也听不懂讲什么，哎，猜猜猜，哎，后期的话越来越顺了，哎，他自己这样子，他自己进步哎，我们都。这是我们都可以看到的。那当然他讲的佛法是深入浅出，让我们很容易就接受到，那这个是我们也是得到利益。
Because of a limited time, I have to skip a few masters and quickly get to our own 师父Master 圣严。We don't need to talk too much about him because many of you are already familiar with his stories, but the vows that he made, This is why he said initially that Buddha Dharma is so great, yet there are so few people that really truly understand it, and there's so much misunderstanding surrounding the Buddha Dharma. And this is the vow. So he made the vow to try to teach, share Buddha Dharma with as many people as possible. And because of this vow that it propelled him to make a lot of changes, he needed to do a lot of learning himself as well. So take his Mandarin Chinese as an example. Over the years, it actually changed. Initially, when he first started teaching, there were times that even I couldn't quite understood his Chinese. But years later, his accent changed. It became a lot more easier to understand. And also, his understanding of the Buddha Dharma and the way he actually teaches it, it's very deep and profound, yet the way he's able to explain to people is very simple and straightforward. And along this process, we as the disciples actually benefit a lot from him.
那从这些大师的这个故事，我们看到呢，第一个是发愿，那发愿的重要。第二个呢，这些愿呢，它有个特质呢，这些愿不是为自己的，它是为众生、为大众做的。大众做的时候才会有力量。那如果是为了个人的时候呢，个人的力量就是有限的。那这个样子的时候呢，你那个推动力哈。有遇到困难，有遇到挫折的时候呢，你要有这个推动力的时候呢，那个推动力可能是不是那么强，因为怎么样，如果是只是为了自己小小的个人的利益啊，是只要遇到一些小小的困难可能就放弃了。可是为了大众，为了众生的愿呢，这个力量是很强的。那为什么诸佛一开始的时候，这个在因地修行的时候就发众生无边誓愿度这个四弘誓愿呢，它一定是有原因的。
So based on all these stories, the historical records of the great masters, it shows us that it's extremely important to make vows, to give you the direction. And also another very important point to keep in mind is that these vows that the masters made were not for themselves. They were not intended to benefit themselves. And because it's intended to benefit all sentient beings, so the power, the strength that these masters are able to muster were very strong. As opposed to if you were to make vows that's only to help yourself or to help a limited group of people, then the corresponding strength, motivation that you're able to garner will be less, more limited. And if you encounter, if the wish is only for yourself, whatever obstacles you encounter, big or small, it's easy to retreat from your initial motivation. But like these great masters, because their vows were intended to benefit sentient beings, so it was very powerful. And this is also why for all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as when they embark their practice, they make their four great vows as a way to steer their practice and as also to help them generate the strength and vigor to practice.
所以回到好愿在人间这个主题我自己想好愿意留在人间发有意义的愿。
So let's go back to the topic or the theme of this year, which is making a good wish for the world. The way I personally interpret it is that I am very willing to make this wish to continue to dwell this world in order to continue to generate these great wishes and vows to benefit sentient beings.
可是发愿要做的哦，不是发愿然后不做的哦，要实践哦，实践呢，你才会从这个愿里头得到什么样一个启发哦。希望大家呢也这样子好愿意在人间做发有意义的愿哦。
So whatever wish that you make, you actually have to practice and actualize it and to put it into act upon it. So you're not just making empty promises or wishes. You have to have real actions that correspond with your good wish. And in this process, there will be insights. You will be able to glean, get more insights from doing so.So at the end of this talk, I wish that all of us together will continue to be willing to be in this world, to be the ones that's generating the good wishes to help sentient beings.
愿不一定要很大，就是从小的开始也可以。大家愿意吗？
The wish that you make don't have to be profound or grand. It's okay to start from small places. Are you willing to make some good wishes for this year?
好，新年祝福大家身体健康，一切顺利，吉祥如意。
Wish that everybody will enjoy great health and all your endeavors will be smooth and auspicious.